Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, here we go, episode 144. And, you know what, kids? This is going to be an interesting one, I think. Maybe not interesting in the good way. So I am absolutely exhausted. I am so tired. And I strongly consider doing a rerun tonight. But if you're hearing this, I decided against it. So I had really bad insomnia last night. It was just brutal. I've been getting this here lately every once in a while. And after my big Sunday adventure, which you heard about on the last show, of throwing an epic brunch and all that, and all these people at the house and hanging out, eating and drinking and talking all day, and then going to Williams and Graham, like, which is literally like arguably the best cocktail bar in America, a little speakeasy here in Denver, and having a great time with the lovely and talented Mark Giesecheck, my podcast partner on the Over the Counter podcast, and the author of Light on the Dark Passages of Scripture, which you should go buy a copy of on Amazon right now. So after that night, I came home. I didn't have to be in until like noon, and I knocked it out of the park. I had a great night's sleep. So I use Sleep Cycle, if anybody's familiar with that, as a piece of software. You download this piece of software and you put your iPhone under your sheet on the corner of your bed, right? And it tracks your movements, and I think maybe sound plays a role in it, and it can track like when you're in like awake and when you're like in light sleep and when you're in sleep and when you're in deep sleep, and you know, and it likes to see certain kinds of patterns in that movement and whatever, right? And so I got 8.5 hours and I knocked it out of the park, right? Just perfect, like 93%. I mean, it was like textbook patterns. Boom. That's what you want to do. That's what a good night's sleep should look like. And then, and I felt great. Now I woke up. What's funny is that you can give it like anywhere from 10 minutes up to an hour leeway of when to wake you up, because it likes to wake you up on the top end of a sleep cycle, right? So I give it like 30 minutes, and I'd say 85% of the time, it will catch me at the top of a sleep cycle, and you're kind of just barely waking up, and you kind of wake up and realize you're awake. And then when you roll over, I always kind of roll over. And if you roll over, then it'll feel that movement, and it'll the algorithm will wake you up, right? So I had this great night's sleep, but it did wake me up kind of like on my way down. Like, and so I was a little rough when I first woke up, but I felt great. So I went through my day, did my thing. And then, so last night, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to bed early. I'm going to put two good sleep days together. I'm going to start trying to sleep. And I've been reading about biphasic sleep a little bit. And so I was almost like, yeah, it was like 9 o'clock. I went to bed. I'm like, I'm well rested from yesterday. Maybe I'll kind of go into that biphasic sleep, where you sleep, in two distinct phases. Right. And I might talk about that a little bit. We may talk about sleep a little while today. And so, I went to bed, and I think I got to sleep like 9:30, read for a little while. I woke up, I mean, not even 2 hours later, and didn't go back to sleep until like 4 o'clock this morning. Oh my gosh. And then I had to get up at like 5:45, 6 o'clock to go in to work. And man, I have to admit, I did pretty good so far today. I just like drank a ton of caffeine, got myself rolling. And, I got a lot done today. I was kind of like, I knew if I stopped moving that I would start getting really tired. So I just started doing everything. Just kept on my feet, rolling and stocking and, you know, and doing my thing, you know. So, but the minute I sat down, I mean, I got a lot done this morning. I got a lot of work done on my taxes and stuff. I was like working on Intuit, QuickBooks stuff. But man, I tell you what, I hit a wall. So anyway, yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. Let's talk about sleep for a little while. I think sleep is super interesting as a concept. I think it's super interesting. Well, as a reality, not just as a concept, but it's so Mark Giesecek and I did an entire episode of the Over the Counter podcast about this. The first time when a book came out, now there's some new research coming out and it's kind of in the news again. So it turns out that from time immemorial till, you know, the Industrial Revolution, in some places still, non-industrialized areas today, people still sleep in two distinct phases. So they you can find references to this everywhere from, you know, classical Greek literature, stuff in the scriptures makes sense of it now, all the way up through, you know, medieval writings and Shakespeare into, you know, early 18th century medical texts and stuff. And they universally are pretty much called the first sleep and the second sleep. Right. So, so think about this. Before the dawn of electricity, you've got fire and you've got candles. So now think about this before you've got proper dwellings, you know, like in the Paleolithic era. You don't want to be out and running around in the dark because predators hunt in the dark. You want to have your back to a wall or be in a cave, and you want to have a big fire going to help keep you warm. And that fire will be between you and any bad things with teeth that would like to make calories out of you, right? And so you don't want to be out running around at night, right? So by the time dusk rolls around, you're pretty much down, right? And you're not moving around much. So it's dark, you're not moving around much. Firelight, unlike blue light from all of our lights that we have now, doesn't affect your sleep. It doesn't affect melatonin release. And so universally, even up into like the time when people were using candlelight and oil lamps and houses and all that, people would go to bed roughly an hour or so after dusk. So yes, you would sleep less in the summertime and more in the wintertime. So it's wintertime. It's like 5:30, 6 o'clock, you know. By 7, 7:30, 8, you're going down. You're down for the night, right? So, but what would happen is people would sleep, you know, 3 to 5 hours, you know, a few sleep cycles, couple sleep, you know, maybe two long sleep cycles, maybe three sleep cycles, different people. And then they would wake up. And so they would, you would be up for like an hour or two, and people would do all kinds of stuff. They would read, they would pray, they would have sex, they would go sit on the porch and smoke a pipe and visit with neighbors. People would go for a little stroll or something. I mean, it was like really, really common for everybody to be up. In fact, it was so common that you see, just pre-industrial medical texts, they will make references to this probably isn't true, but they would say that you should always have sex during the time between the first and the second sleep because you're more rested, and the children produced after you're rested in that first sleep are going to be stronger kids, right? Stronger people. They're going to be better and more healthy. Right. Now, obviously, that's probably doesn't really have much to do with it on the genetic level and all that. But the point being is that they didn't have to explain what first and second sleep was. They just said that. Right. And people were like, OK, that's normal. That was this normal experience. So think about, you know, a couple of things that that time in between was called. And a lot of people just called it the watch, right? And then kind of after, almost like a military term. But think about, like, you know, in Western monasteries, right? We have the concept. There's a time of prayer in the Liturgy of the Hours called vigil. And in traditional old school monasteries back in the day, and even in very traditional monasteries today, people would go to bed after compline sleep until about 2 o'clock in the morning and get up and go pray vigil and then either go back to sleep or go to their room and pray for a while or hang out. And so a lot of people would like get up and go back to sleep and then get up in time for matins or morning prayer, right? Or in the office of readings. So I used to think, man, that is just so crazy. Why would you make people get up in the middle of the night? That is just not healthy for them. It's bad. And it turns out the reason they made an hour of prayer at that time is that people were already up. It was just normal for people to sleep that way. So it's pretty fascinating to me, this whole biphasic sleep thing. And so the French called it, I think how you pronounce this, dorvé, and it means waking sleep. So it was kind of like this kind of groggy, you don't have to do anything with it. It's not productive time. It's time for creative thought or prayer or making love or just being time. You know, like Madeleine L'Engle said, being time is never wasted time. You know, where there's nothing, it's dark. You can't get much done. You can't light the house all up. You'll wake people up if they're not up. And you don't want to make a bunch of noise. And it's just not a productive time in the sense of like going out and working or something. So people would write. People would light a candle and read for a while. They would maybe just, you know, just hang out, you know. And so that the feeling of that kind of strange awake but still kind of asleep was evidently very prized, especially like in France where they called it dorvé. There was a lot of literature around it because it's kind of a prized moment. But anyway, so let's go to the break. When we come back, we'll see if we want to keep talking about sleep or maybe we'll talk about something else. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. So, we were talking about sleep. And it's kind of a rabbit trail, but it's, you know, this is what I'm thinking about today because I barely slept last night and I am crazy tired. And so we're just kind of talking about sleep. I'm kind of using the fact that I'm exhausted and I've been thinking about it all day as a, you know, kind of a reason to kind of share some ideas. And I'm actually been fascinated with the concept of sleep for a very long time. Like I said, Mark and I, if you want to go over to the Over the Counter podcast, you can search for that on iTunes. There's an old podcast where me and Mark did an entire episode on the nature of sleep. So some of this might be a repeat if you listen to that, but you can hear what I sound like when I'm talking to someone else in conversation when I'm talking about the same thing. So it's interesting. We think of, first of all, they're not really in super good agreement about what sleep is about. And when you do sleep, they're not in super good agreement about what dreaming is. You know, they think that, you know, it's ironic that so many cultures have looked at dreams as very, very significant in the symbols in them. But it turns out they think that dreaming is your brain clearing out and kind of letting go of some synaptic connections that are not really useful or meaningful. And so the irony is that the reason you dream about that girl you knew in third grade and broccoli and with chalky cheese sauce or whatever, you know, whatever weird combination of things, you're sitting there eating your mom's overcooked broccoli with that chalky cheese sauce with this girl that you haven't thought of, and you're like, why would I think about that girl? What is the meaning of this broccoli? It means nothing. It means that you've learned how to cook broccoli and you don't smother it in cheese sauce. So that flavor combination of bad oversteamed broccoli and chalky cheese sauce doesn't have any meaning to you anymore. No more than that random girl that you haven't thought about in a very, very long time from third grade. There is no meaning. Now, obviously, there might be a spiritual dream there may be a dream that's kind of like symbolic in some way, but that's not going to be like your normal dream, right? So, but beyond that, they're not really super sure why we sleep. There are some animals that don't sleep. And it's interesting. People have tried to hack this for years. And there are people who can live on very little sleep. So let's talk about... it's kind of fun. I like talking about sleep. I'd rather be sleeping right now. But and I'm going to go to sleep right after I'm done. I'm just going to go right on down. I'll probably wake up in the middle of the night like I did last time I tried to go to bed early. See, I am by nature a vampire. I am very, very, very happy to get my second wind about 12, 12:30. I mean, it's like rolling around 11:30 to 12:30. I'm like, hey, you want to put in another movie? You want to open a bottle of wine? Hey, let's go. Let's have a conversation. I mean, I am like, I catch my second wind like late. And anytime that we have like a big break or I'm between gigs or something and I don't have a very set time frame that I have to work or something, I immediately turn into a vampire. I just completely just stay up. I think my normal sleep schedule, not normal in the sense of natural, but just like whatever my particular weird bad habits and interests and disorder will turn into, is to stay up till 2-3 in the morning and then sleep until 10 or 11. That's just, I love that schedule. I guess I kind of like being up late. I like being up when everyone else is asleep. I like being awake and the whole world is asleep and it's quiet. But you could do that by getting up early. But I am the polar opposite of a morning guy. So let's talk about a couple things about like how much sleep you need and when you should go to sleep and all that. So what is that guy, Denmore wrote The Promise of Sleep, or Dennett. Is it Dennett? I'll have to look it up. Anyway, the book is called The Promise of Sleep. I read that a long time ago. So I have sleep apnea. So I stop breathing when I sleep. Let's look this up. Promise of Sleep. Let's see what happens there. So I have sleep apnea. And I am... what is the author's name here? Yeah, William C. DeMint. That's what it was. William C. DeMint, The Promise of Sleep. Really good book. I read this book because I started getting very interested in sleep when I got diagnosed with sleep apnea. So I stopped breathing when I sleep, so I have to use, I used to use a constant positive air pressure unit, or what's called a CPAP. Now I use an APAP, an adjustable positive air pressure unit, which is automatically... or an automatic positive air pressure, whatever. I don't know what the A stands for, automatic or adjustable. Anyway, but it adjusts the air that you need, how much pressure you need based on how much resistance it's experiencing, right? And so I got really interested in sleep when I found out that what had been kind of causing me some inability to study and think and stuff and a lot of some depression and stuff, it was actually tied to me not spending nearly enough time in REM sleep. So, you know, REM sleep being like this rapid eye movement, REM, that's where the band got their name, right? And so you go through these different phases and different things happen. And it's funny, like when you're in like deep sleep and you're in that rapid eye movement sleep, you're kind of paralyzed. Your body paralyzes itself so that you won't act out what you're doing and like hurt yourself. But your brain is actually really super active when you're in deep sleep. Your brain is doing all kinds of stuff. You're just cranking. It's not like you're down and dead. It's like your brain is really, really rolling. So long story short, I got interested in sleep and sleep research, and I bought, this book. I mean, I was working at Barnes & Noble at the time, back in the day in Cape Girardeau. Shout out to the Cape Girardeau Barnes & Noble crew if you're listening. There's like three of you who know me still. But that was a million years ago. Wow. And so I bought William C. DeMint's The Promise of Sleep, and he talks about a concept called sleep debt. And I think sleep debt is fascinating. So the idea is that you have a number, right? You have a number every night that you need to get, right? And then if you don't get that number, you owe the difference. So sleep is like spending more than you make on a credit card. So you need X amount of sleep, and the debt just builds up and builds up and builds up. Now, how did they figure this out? NASA funded a study where they took these people and they took all these time cues away from them and let them sleep, and they didn't know what time it was. And it was really interesting because, like, my mom used to say all the time, oh, I can never sleep past, you know, 6:30 or whatever. I just always wake up. I can never sleep more than, or I hear people say, oh, I can never sleep more than 6 hours. I mean, I wake up, you know. Everyone in the study, when they took time cues away, slept between 12 and like 14 and a half hours a day. They slept like a ton. They slept all these hours away, right? And then each one of them, they would sleep like, you know, like say 12.2 hours or whatever every night. And then at some time, they'd sleep like 9.37 hours. And then the researcher would know, okay, tomorrow night we're going to see their number. And the next night they would sleep 8 hours and 20 minutes, and it'd be exactly so many sleep cycles, right? And then the next night they would sleep like almost that exact amount, certain amount of sleep cycles, same length, you know. Every single night they would do the same thing. And so they figured out that what happens is you churn through your sleep debt. You sleep up all the debt that you had, and now you're on your normal number. Now, what's interesting is they never said, you would think that based on history, you would see people sleeping in biphasic sleep. You sleep first sleep, second sleep, because that's what everybody did. But I think when they took all the time cues away, I think they slept in chunks, but it was X amount. They didn't really wake up and stay up in between the, you know, maybe if it was four sleep cycles, they didn't sleep two sleep cycles and then sleep and get up for a while, then sleep another two sleep cycles and then be up for a long time, like people did evidently everywhere, first and second sleep. So, but anyway, they know that this sleep debt builds up like, I mean, like 6 months, I think it was like their longest experiment was 6 months, and there was one dude who never caught up. So they know that it builds up for at least 6 months. So it's always been a dream of mine, a serious dream of mine. And you know what? In reality, this wouldn't take much. That at some point between gigs, you know, when I quit one day job or do something else, I really want to take a sleep vacation. I want to go someplace. It could be the most boring place in the world. I just want to go someplace that and take as many time cues away as I can, just black the house out or whatever, and just marathon sleep as hard as I possibly can for a month or two. Just eat when I'm up, you know, eat right and eat good and everything. Don't do much of anything. Just read books or whatever and just keep it low key and just sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep until I'm caught up and just see what happens. Who knows? Maybe I'm like smart. I don't know. Maybe I'll be all smart and I'll write books or something after I am not tired all the time. So here's the crazy sleep episode segment number two. Coming to an end. I warned you in advance. This is going to be a weird one. You're listening to The Counter.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble and sleepy host, Andrew Whaley, and we are talking about sleep today. Are we going to talk about sleep the entire episode? I don't know. I planned on doing one segment about sleep, and I have all kinds of material. I've been fascinated by the concept of sleep for a really long time. And I've struggled with insomnia different times in my life. And I have sleep apnea. So once I had some health issues and stuff and some attentional issues and all this, and they diagnosed me, I think it was in 1999, with sleep apnea. I did the sleep study, which, man, I tell you what, I don't think they do it this way now, because they've got such good electronics with the adjustable. They probably just send you home with an adjustable CPAP and then look at the data after a few weeks or something. But I don't know what they do, but maybe they still do the full on sleep study. But I went in and they had to glue all these wires to my head, and then they had wires on my temples and on, I mean, all these electronic wires literally glued to my head, and they had them all braided back like in a big long ponytail, kind of like a headdress behind me. And I was supposed to lay down in this here bed and sleep, and they were going to watch me sleep, right? And they were going to judge, you know, what happened to my sleep. And my sleep apnea has gotten worse too since then. I only had I had mild to moderate sleep apnea then. I have pretty severe sleep apnea now. But when I started seeing how different I felt, and I started learning about these different phases of sleep and everything, I started realizing that, man, sleep is like huge for us, right? And so I kind of started getting interested in it and reading about it and reading articles about sleep. And it seemed to be, I found out that I had sleep apnea right at kind of the dawn of a lot of really new and interesting sleep research. And so there was a lot to kind of dig on, you know? So the thing is that we were talking about sleep debt and how you need X amount of sleep. Now here, let's back up on that for a second. You don't actually need X amount of sleep per se. What you need is X amount of deep sleep, you know? And so you see these people that say, oh, I just don't need but like 4 hours sleep a night. You know, I would love to put them on Sleep Cycle little app and see what their charts look like. Because chances are what they're doing is what would take us, a lot of people a long time. They would go like, you know, awake, light sleep for a little bit, then sleep, and then they kind of go down into deep sleep. And then so they're in deep sleep for 15 minutes to 30 minutes. And then you kind of tip up and start coming back up, you know, and these waves happen. And at least Sleep Cycle, the app, likes when you have these nice, smooth kind of peaks and valleys that get more shallow over the course of the night. And the one time that I had a big long sleep on a weekend, I just was really tired from the day before. I think I was traveling or something, and I got home and I slept, just shut the alarm off and just slept, and I had a perfectly shaped, and I got 100% one time. But it really, really puts it. And sometimes I'll have a 9 hour sleep on a weekend or something, but it didn't like the shape of my sleep pattern. And so it'll shut down my score, and it really makes me mad. It's almost like a game. You know, some people play like, you know, Farmville or whatever. My mom evidently has been, gotten all into like reporting gas scores on gasbuddy.com, and if you get certain scores and you do certain things, you can get like points and stuff. Like, she tries to beat other people. I use the Waze app to get around sometimes, especially when I'm in California, and there it's a whole like social thing with points on there. I just use it so that I can know whether there's a wreck or a cop up ahead and not get lost with my directions and know if there's traffic and it takes you around it. But there's people who do these things for games, right? So I think I'm kind of like that. Maybe we should create a sleep app where you can like compete with other people. There's a free idea for someone. If you build a sleep app with a social aspect to it where you can compete with your friends for sleep, I want a cut, okay? Because that's a great idea. I should have probably not said that on the air. I should probably just go back, cut that piece out. Just edit that. Call Matt Kernan, my friend that builds apps for a living, and talk to him about how to do that. Anyway, so you don't need X amount of sleep. What you need is a very specific amount of deep sleep. So you can train yourself. If you don't sleep very long, like if you go to bed at like midnight and get up at 5 for a long time, eventually your body will figure out how to wring out a decent amount of deep sleep from that. It will just not spend as much time getting into deep sleep, and it'll stay down there longer. But, oh, here comes the yawn. Here's a good sound effect for you. But kind of like, I remember I have a Volkswagen Passat, and my friend Ann has a Volkswagen Passat, and she can try to convince me that you can disregard what they say about the car, and you can put regular plain old gasoline, not premium, 87 octane or whatever, in the car, and it'll run rough for a while, but the computer will figure out how to run on that gas, and it runs just fine after a while. I tried that, and my car ran like hell for forever, and I finally gave up on the project. And I just didn't see it got better, but it never got good. So I cleaned that stuff out, and I put in real gasoline, and it drove properly. So I think you can kind of hack it, but you're never gonna really, you're never really gonna get what you're kind of built for, right? And I'm a total hypocrite with it, but I'm kind of into the whole paleo concept and the idea that you really want to try to replicate the environment in the way of living that your body and your metabolism and all that is kind of built for. So what you eat, the way you move, and the way you sleep. You know, now the extreme side of that hacking is a system called polyphasic sleeping. Now there's different versions of it, and I guess technically speaking, biphasic sleeping, that first sleep, second sleep, that seems to be kind of normal for our species, it's technically speaking polyphasic because it's, you know, it's plural phases, right? But in polyphasic sleep, the most common one, and you see some tech startup guys do this, and I think Tim Ferriss has written extensively on this. I think he actually tried this. But there are people that sleep 20 minutes every 4 hours. So they go to sleep for 20 minutes, they wake up, and they're up for 4 hours, and they go back to sleep for 20 minutes. And they do that, and they get to where they will go right to sleep and wake up without an alarm. And so, but what's interesting, when you put those people on a study and you look at them, they lay down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and they drop. I mean, they fall off the cliff. I mean, they just go from awake to deep sleep. And they go deep sleep, deep sleep, deep sleep for 15 to 17 minutes. And then they climb up and they wake up naturally at like 19 and a half minutes or whatever. Their body has just been trained by them that you're not going to get time to take all that time going through those stages to get into deep sleep. So you better get it. Now, here's what's interesting. When you add up all their deep sleep, they sleep, you know, I think it's like 2.5 hours a day when you add it all up. When you do that, when you add up all their deep sleep, they're getting near the amount of deep sleep that people who are sleeping enough get. It's just they're getting only deep sleep. Now, it's interesting. Some people thrive on this. Evidently, there has been a lot of scientists and inventors and thinkers that slept in this way. Who they would just lay down and sleep for a little bit, and they'd get up, start working again, and then they would get tired, and they would lay down and sleep, and it would be kind of a certain pattern that they developed over time, and they didn't need much sleep. They just needed a nap every once in a while, and they would function well. And there's people who do function like that. There was one guy I read about that tried this, and he got so bored. You know, he just couldn't watch any more Netflix or whatever, DVDs. And he ended up going and getting a second job. So, because he was just like, so he was just had so much extra time on his hands that he got a part-time job. I think it was like in a grocery store, like a 24-hour grocery store or something, where he could come in and he could sleep, get up. It was right next to his house. He would go down there, work for 3.5 hours, and then go back home, get a sleep, and then he could kind of hang out for a while. He just worked this little small shift, right? So, I mean, I don't know. If you're young and you've got some flexibility in your schedule, give it a shot just for grins. Sleep 20 minutes every 4 hours. See what happens. If you have a long work day with someone else in control of your time and where you have to be, that's probably not going to work unless you work at like Google or something and they have nap pods and let you set your own agenda. But I don't know. Maybe I'll try that someday. If I ever end up doing the counter position full time and don't have to worry about any other kind of consulting or anything, who knows? Maybe I will try polyphasic sleep and I will give you kind of the report every day on how it's going. So anyway, this is kind of fun. I haven't done like a big topical show in a while. So let's go to the break. And when we get back, I think I want to talk about, let's talk about, what do they call that? Waking sleep or, I'll think of it during the break. We're listening to the camera.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and today's show, because I'm tired, has been all about sleep. Didn't plan on doing an entire show about sleep, but I guess, you know, I'm really interested in sleep, and I know a lot about it. So I remember what I couldn't think of before the break: lucid dreaming. That's what I was thinking of. So that's the last thing we want to talk about: lucid dreaming. I don't know how many of you experienced lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is when you're dreaming, but you know you're dreaming. So you can kind of like take control of it or kind of control what you're doing or choose to do what you're going to do, but you don't have the normal limitations because you're in your dream state, right? And now that sounds really weird and really new agey, but a lot of people I know who have had that experience, they bumped into it naturally. Now it's funny. I remember the first time that I knew what to call it and had the experience. I've had the experience on several occasions, like when I was a kid or something, but I remember I was living on Santa Cruz Street in Ventura, California, and I had this dream, and I was old and I'd put on weight and I hurt my back and stuff. I hadn't skateboarded in a really long time. And I was dreaming about skateboarding, but I take that back. In the spring of 2000, I lost a ton of weight in 2000 on my first big adventure in low carb dieting. And I got down to the top end of the weight that I was when I was skateboarding. And I started skateboarding a little bit again, just cruising around the neighborhood, popping a few ollies and just having some fun. But for the most part, it had been a very long time since I'd done tricks or anything really. And, but I remember just lucid dreaming and actually being able to control the board and like skateboarding, and I could feel everything. And it was interesting because I skateboarded for 14 years. And so all the muscle memory is still there, and all the feeling of what, you know, concrete with wax on top of it feels like when it's sliding across the trucks. And when you're doing a grind on your board or something, and how that's different from a board slide, even though it's the same concrete, and how that feels against wood when you're sliding versus like, you know, plastic rails back in the day. You know, I just have a real rich set of tactile memories around skateboarding, right? The feeling of an ollie, the feeling of, you know, the coping clacking on the tail when you come back down or something, you know? And so, I would have these skateboarding dreams sometimes. And I started looking into it because I was like, I can control this. I know I'm dreaming. I'd be so stoked when it happened. I'd be like, yes, I'm dreaming, so I can go skateboarding. And I would like kick around and I would like, you know, find, and I would do all kinds of stuff that I couldn't do when I was actually skateboarding, but I had seen in videos. But my brain could put together the tactile memories and compile a reasonable composite of what that would feel like. So I knew what it was like to ollie downstairs. I knew what it was like to do a kickflip 180. I knew what it was like to do a heel flip 180. Even though I never did heel flip 180s downstairs, I could do one in my dream, and it felt pretty real because you wouldn't fall off. I would hit like every trick. So it turns out that this is a really serious phenomenon that people for a long time have been experiencing and even cultivating, right? So I remember living in Ventura there, I got really interested in lucid dreaming, and I went down this internet rabbit hole. And there, if you get interested in lucid dreaming, oh my goodness, there is so much junk on the internet. There's just like, I mean, there's whole forums and all this stuff. I just Googled it and it reminded me. I was like, oh my goodness, there's so much stuff out here and it's grown. I mean, I just put in sleeping, but dreaming, but you know you're dreaming. And I saw lucid dreaming, so I put lucid dreaming in, and it's just tons of sites dedicated to it. But it's fascinating. It turns out, now remember, like I said before, when you're dreaming, your brain is active. And so, and you're experiencing things and you're just kind of like, but you're not controlling them. When you're lucid dreaming, you're experiencing those things, but you can control the situation and choose, you know, you could be in the house and there's a scary guy in the house, like a nightmare kind of a thing, and he's going to get you, and you can go, oh, this is a dream, you're not real. You can look right at him and go, you're not real, go away, and he'll go away. Or you can like say, see you later, you're not real, and go outside and get in your car, and you can go drive really fast down roads or whatever. I mean, it's like you could do whatever you want, right? Now the problem is that one of the first things you do is when you start wanting to lucid dream, you realize you're dreaming. You get super stoked, your adrenaline goes up a little bit, and you wake up. So you have to learn to be kind of detached from it and how to get used to it where you don't get excited that it's happening, right? But anyway, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a ton of weird new age crap out there about lucid dreaming. But there's stories in these forums. Like I remember reading about this woman who was an opera singer. And now, sidebar, remember, just for the record, this is going to sound crazy, what I was about to say, when you hear it, you're going to go, oh, come on, really? Remember, Olympic athletes spend, I think, 85% of their training time in visualization. So like when Michael Phelps won one of the Olympic races, and his goggle came loose, and he got all kinds of water in his eyes. They asked him, what was that like? And he said, exactly like I expected it would be, because he had did that himself on purpose in the pool, felt what it was like a few times, and then had visualized the course, visualized his reactions, visualized how he would respond to that limitation, the visual cue limitation and all that. He had played that and six other possible scenarios out. What happens if I get a cramp? What happens if this happens? What happens if my Speedos fell off? What if the, you know, whatever. He had an eventuality for each one. And so these, you know, that Olympic athlete spends way more time visualizing the course and visualizing going down the course or visualizing throwing the discus than they do actually doing it. So now remember that. So I remember reading in this forum about this woman who's an opera singer, and she said that she had mastered this lucid dreaming so well. And you know how in dream time, dreaming, you know, what seems like days in a dream can be like a few minutes asleep, or you know it's not it's a very different thing. So she could get up, she could go to bed at night, before she would go to bed, she would look over a piece of music and just really look at it carefully, let her brain really take a picture of it, and then she would go to sleep. She would wake up in her dream, and wherever she was, she would choose to be like in her space. And she has like a dream space where she practices, like this nice concert hall or something. And she would look down, and there that piece of music would be on the stand. And she would look at it, and she could see each note and everything. And she would practice that piece of music that she'd never seen until she went to bed. And she would just look over it before she went to bed. Then she would open it up, and she would practice that piece of music for what seemed like days, and she would have it down and have it memorized, and she would wake up the next morning completely refreshed, go get in the shower, and would sing that entire aria or whatever with perfect precision in the shower the next day without the music in front of her, because she had practiced it for a week overnight or something. And the weird thing is that people consistently report when you sleep and you do lucid dreaming, you actually wake more rested. So that's, I don't know. I got really obsessed with this for a while. I was like, keeping a dream journal. I was like, certain things don't work in a dream, like clock faces are weird and digital readouts are weird. And so you're supposed to constantly be checking to see if you're asleep all the time during the day to get yourself used to the idea of checking to see if you're asleep. I never really could discipline myself to get crazy about it. There's some movies about this. Like The Good Night is literally about the culture around people chasing lucid dreaming. And then there's things like Inception. There's a Linklater film, Waking Life. That's like this, that's about this kind of, there's a Vanilla Sky. There's a bunch of, you know, even The Matrix, Avatar, about being asleep, but then actively doing something while you're asleep. Right. So, so I remember one time when I was a kid, I had this big, long dream that I won the lottery. And I mean, we went through all the mundane stuff of talking to the accountants and going and, you know, meeting them at the bank with a check when there's a guy with a guard in there and all this. And we went through all this stuff, and I went and bought a new car, and we were talking about where we're going to move to and all this stuff. And it was like, it was like real time for weeks. And when I woke up and my room still looked like it used to before I won the lottery and that car wasn't in the driveway, I was literally confused. This is like in high school. I remember doing this. I remember I bought a Lamborghini in the dream, a red Lamborghini, the same one that was on my wall. And I saw the poster on the wall, but it wasn't in the driveway. And it confused me for about 10 minutes. Dreaming is a weird place, just like the counter position is a weird place. And sometimes out of nowhere, a super tired Andrew will ramble about sleep for 4 solid seconds. All right, let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. I'm going to bed. Good night, everyone.